and he's going to talk to us about digital engagement. Richard.
Good afternoon. Hi, I'm here speaking to you from the Cabinet Office about digital engagement. Very good question as to what that is. About this time last year, I stood in front of the hall downstairs. Okay, how's that working? I don't normally speak with a microphone, so I either shout at it or hope it just picks it up. I was hoping it was picking me up, but there we go. Is that level about right? That work? Bit louder? Okay, fine. About this time last year, I was stood up on the platform downstairs talking about the launch of Show Us a Better Way and the power of information, all the kind of stuff that's kind of summarised by this word cloud here. We have to have a word cloud. It's sort of this, kind of last season's thing now, but hey-ho. But anyway, digital engagement's kind of the delivery arm for that. So what are we doing? Well, we're trying to sort of drive out the fact that civil servants' jobs tend to be driven by replications of paper processes. So this is what the civil service produced 154 years ago. This is what it produces today. Now, if you look at the two things next to one another, you can see what 154 years of progress looks like. I'm reassured. I feel quite comforted as a civil servant. It's still got the crest on there, so everybody can still tell we work for the Queen. And you can see this. So the document on the left here is a document written by Tom Steinberg and Ed Mayo on how the internet should change change what we're doing. And even that document had to be published in this way. So how are we changing it? Well, this is we published in the Cabinet Office a document on the future for public services. And you'll notice there's a nice smiling picture of Gordon Brown on the slide. That's just so you know that he endorsed it. It's very important, this that it made it into my annual appraisal, that I got some of this stuff into a document endorsed by Gordon Brown. But the important things here is that as far as sort of what we're going to do within the civil service, we're going to put information right at the core of how we make your lives better. There's the sort of phrase that everybody's using in politics at the moment about democratizing power of information. And right at the bottom, there's a nice little bit about how if we give people knowledge, then we give them power. We enable them to shape their public services and transform them. So what does that actually mean? Managed to sneak in a slide transition. Always forget to take that out. So there's four themes of openness, and I didn't craft this just for the fact I was coming to OpenTech, honest. They were in there before I knew I was speaking. And the sort of foremost amongst those is about open information, because without actually opening up what we know about public services, how on earth are we going to do any of the other things? You can't have a conversation with someone where one side of the conversation has all of the information and power and just sits on it and doesn't share it. You can't have feedback if you don't know what's actually going on and what's going on there. But so the four things I'm going to touch on very quickly before we get to the interesting bit, which is what John's going to talk about, which is all about the sort of what we're doing on open data at the moment, are about open information, open conversation, open feedback, and open innovation. Unsurprisingly, the thing that I have to have in this slide deck, otherwise I get fired, is a slide on data.gov. And the bit I really wanted to flag up here is about, these two slides kind of, to me, sum up why this stuff's important and how it can make people's lives better. So if you look down here, it's got worldwide earthquakes in the last 5 days as an XML feed. Sounds interesting, very worthy, great. Here's where the technology falls down. It really did fall down, bugger. It worked on the run through on the train. Bear with me, hopefully it will work when I do that. This is a nice little video that hope that if it works, come on, we'll just take you through the earthquake has, fine, we'll ignore it. Assume that there is a video on screen that says, that's where it all starts, So that is completely impossible without actually opening up the information we have and opening it up in a granular form. You know, it would be impossible to just go, Christ, was that an earthquake? Or what, was it just, you know, a big lorry going past the house? Where was the epicenter? You know, I had that experience about 4 years ago when I was at law school. There was the earthquake in the Midlands. I just assumed it was some lorry had got lost in central Nottingham. Actually, I should have been able to find out really quickly, simply, easily, just by typing into Google, yeah, it was an earthquake. It was an earthquake in the Midlands. Here was the epicenter. You can then vaguely work out where your relatives are and who you should phone in the middle of the night to say, are you all right? Because it was at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you really don't want to be putting in a phone call to your mother-in-law at 2 o'clock in the morning unless it was genuinely an earthquake and her stuff might have fallen over. It's just not a recipe for a happy life. So, you know, that's why the information is important. Just go quickly through the other types of things here. This is DFID, which is one of my favourite departments for putting this slide up there. The person who's responsible, back of the room, thank you very much for the slide, it's great. The really interesting thing here is, you know, they make it really simple for the customer. For someone landing at the site, they like what DFID do, they want to get involved, they want to help shape things. You can see where what they're sort of formally consulting on. So if you want to find out what their live issues are, you can. You can go in, you can dive into the detail. If you feel really passionately about it, that actually they're missing a trick, they'll send you off platform to the right to your MP service provided by My Society. So they're not being precious about it. They're not saying, oh, well, because you've come to a government department, you must use our infrastructure and you must do this, use our tools. And if you feel really, really passionately about it, they signpost you towards the number 10 petition site so you can get all your friends to come in, pile in and go, well, no, this is a real live issue, and then you'll get something back. We'll skip through NHS Choices. It's kind of a nice site. It's a way of aggregating people's opinions. Yeah, it's a nice vision of where we would like to get to across a wider spectrum. Unfortunately, because there's no Wi-Fi, I couldn't get up the publicexperience.com plug that I was going to put up here as being a fantastic example of feedback and the sort of thing that we should be working with. But just assume there's a slide on publicexperience.com. Go and have a look at it when you get the internet again. On conversation, this is just about sort of talking about stuff online properly and listening to what people say. So this is government, a conversation people are having around the R open source strategy, where somebody had taken our document and just turned it into a commentable form. Fantastic. You know, they're doing something that was very difficult for us to do in platform, off platform. Great. People can dive in, they can talk there, and we should be listening. We should work with the community. I mean, this is what we did for the Power of Information Task Force report. We enable people to just sort of dive in, talk on it, using a nice open source platform that we developed called Commentariat. And finally, we should go off platform. So if there is a large community talking about stuff, this is a petrol, I'm a bit of a petrol head, and this is a sort of community that's talking all about cars. And somebody posts up there, you know, if you drink drive, should you lose your license? The staggering thing from, you know, a civil servant's perspective is that this was a really balanced conversation. And they threw up all the points that I would have been making. But because we just sat on our information, it was kind of, you know, they got to the point where they wanted the data and then they couldn't get at it. And this is kind of the really exciting bit. You know, if we set ourselves a data free, we listen to people's ideas and we work with people to help build them, then we make people's lives better. And this site relaunched yesterday. This is the Innovate site on DirectGov. It launched in February around the time of the snow, and then, you know, kind of got sucked into the machine a bit. You know, there was a whole, that was at the point where people woke up to it and went, oh, right, if we're doing this, we've got to do it properly. So now they're sort of coming back at it, they're resourced. This is hopefully going to turn into a sort of BBC backstage for government. So this is going to be the place where we'll be surfacing our, throwing up some information, we'll be looking to work with the community, we'll be looking to showcase people's applications. So you can see down here there's a little gallery for sort of interesting third-party applications developing public services. nice example here, just of the other sort of stuff that can be happen there. I think I'm just about running up on time and stealing John's thunder. So, John, here's where we next bit of technology fall down. Okay.
John, move the computers.
Yeah. It's just left and right.
Okay, I'll move.
Yeah. You?
I think they're minimum off.
Okay, so I've broken the slides. It doesn't really matter. I will talk through them anyway. They weren't branded in any case. So I'm going to talk a little bit about open government data. Can everyone hear me first off at the back? That's okay, great. So my name's John Sheridan. I work for a piece of government called the Office of Public Sector Information. And what we do is a bundle of things. We're responsible for what in government terms is called reuse policy. So how government approaches the topic of making its data available for other people to do lots of interesting stuff with. We are responsible for managing Crown copyright. We regulate the information trading activities of those parts of government that do sell information. And we're working with the Cabinet Office on open government data. So, how do we actually do this open government data thing? Well, we have a fantastic model to look at just now. The work that has happened in the United States is extraordinary. It's not perfection, but it's extraordinary to see a federal government of that scale and that size start talking about publishing hundreds of thousands of data sets in months is not just ambitious, it is remarkable. And the effect that this has had on policy officials, not just in the UK, but across the whole of Europe, everybody is seeing, watching, looking at what's happening in the United States and going, yeah, we want some of that too. And we want some of that too here in the UK. So whilst it's impressive, there are also some things that when you look at it, maybe you look at it strategically and you think, So my two hmms about data.gov is one, there's this really tight coupling between the data and the way in which you access the data and the tools that you use. And my other hmm is it's terribly centralized. So, you know, you have one bunch of people who are responsible for publishing data and you put all your data there. And really, perfection is that every part of government, and government is distributed, every part of government takes responsibility for publishing its own data as part of its core function. You make data, you publish it. That's what you do. Some of what we want to do is get to that world, but also we want to make progress quickly. So that's one of the kind of themes that we're bouncing around at the moment is, well, how do we get to our perfect world of distributed publishing of open government data and do stuff quickly? And the other problem that we have is, well, why should anyone really care? Where are the truly compelling examples? And the risk that we have right now, particularly as we enter into a period of real acceleration in terms of the amount of data that's available, is that we don't get the really compelling examples to keep building the momentum. And that's one of my fears, that we get to kind of like December or this time next year, that we've published a huge amount of data and that the examples that to the people who are not in this room that go, yes, that's exactly why we should be doing more of this, those examples aren't there. So the work that Richard and I are doing is really about kind of bootstrapping open government data in the UK. So how do we do that? So you may have seen announced, I think probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, the appointment of Tim Berners-Lee to be the government's information advisor. And for anyone who knows or has listened to Tim Berners-Lee, he basically cares about one thing. He cares about open linked data. That's his passion. What do we mean by open linked data? Well, we mean that you identify stuff by URI. We mean that those URIs are HTTP URIs. We mean that when you ask for something at that URI, you get back some useful information. And when you get back some useful information, you get useful information that points to other stuff. So that's what Berners-Lee is all about trying to get us to do. And the fact that he's been appointed by the Prime Minister to get us to do that, from my perspective, is great. It's really, really helpful. So we had two plans. Well, no, we had an original plan. The original plan was that we could evolve our existing websites and find strategies for surfacing some of the data that's supporting those websites. So we did stuff using RDFA, which is a way of embedding semantic information into existing websites. And Jenny Tennyson and I talked about that in last year here. And that's a really effective strategy for kind of evolving the government web estate. So when you're looking at a website, you just kind of make the screen scraping job that bit easier to do, so you can get your hands on the data. And then also that we could harvest and collect the data and build some easy, simple ways at the center that would enable people to access it. And that also is quite nice because it's kind of distributed too. Everybody can add some of this extra metadata to their web pages. And it was a good plan, and we should still do that. But now we have a big plan B. And plan B is we have the opportunity to publish some hitherto unpublished data. And we think there's lots and lots of that. The truth is, I don't think we really know just how much really useful data is sat in central government and the agencies and local government. I really don't think we fully understand just how much is there. So, but there's not one truth. So we're going to do the linked data thing. And for those of you who are not RDF heads, don't worry, because if we do the linked data thing right, we're going to do a whole bundle of other things right too. We're going to do some really important things right, like we're going to have persistent URIs to data, and we're going to do the rest thing. And you won't have to be an RDF person to benefit from the stuff that we'll start doing right. The other thing is that as we get into this large-scale publishing of data, we're inevitably going to start by publishing the stuff. Yeah, so we're going to get our hands on the stuff first, and we'll publish that first. And we know that we're going to need to meet the needs of many different types of developers, not just the RDF people, but the XML people and the JSON people too. So we're in a hurry. There are two claims that have been made, and we're going to have to prove these this year. So the first claim is if we put stuff out there, the community will deal with the formats. And we're going to test that in the next 6 months. You're absolutely going to see UK government testing that. The second claim is if we put stuff out there, the community will build lots of applications that help make the world a better place. And we're going to test that too. So we're really doing it, but we're going to need your help. And we're going to need your help to do our little bundle of things. And if you want to help, please come and talk to me. So we're going to need your help to engineer the data. We're going to need your help to build stuff that shows that this is worth doing. We're going to need you to tell us what you want. And you've been doing that for a while, so we know some of the stuff, but keep telling us what you want. That's really important. We know we've got lots of keys. And anyone who was listening to Harry Metcalf earlier talking about the postcode, why is a postcode so important? Well, it's like a key. And open keys are really, really handy for linking stuff together and doing data mashups. And we have some fantastic open keys, like time, yeah? And because time's an open key, you can do all sorts of things around time. And we have lots of closed keys, but government sat on bundles of keys. So we're going to do a lot of work around keys. And actually, we need your help today. So Richard has in his bag a DVD with 8.5 million records of something that we've acquired in the last 48 hours. Okay, so we've got 8 years' worth of traffic counts. I don't know. We've not looked.
Is traffic passed at particular points at particular times?
Okay, so we have 8.5 million records of traffic counts on a DVD. If you would like to help us either publish that data, or if you would like to do something with that data, please come and talk to us. So raw data now. If we're successful, we're going to be continually in this situation of like turning up, you know, as the kind of, with a bit of jumping at the top, and Tim Berners-Lee going around and talking to ministers, and ministers saying to their officials, hey, let's put out some data. We're kind of like, he says, oh, here's some data. We're going to need you guys to help, one, engineer the data, and two, do useful stuff with the data, because otherwise we're going to lose momentum and we're not going to win this argument, we're not going to win this case. So, how do we want to do this? So, oh, we got the data from DFT and perfection. So, that's exactly what, in terms of the work that we're doing, this bootstrapping exercise is exactly about building capability. So we move from having a small number of people who are doing a project in the center to having lots of people who are regularly thinking about how do we publish our data as part of what we're doing. So that's exactly what we need. We need, in the same way that we have a web team, we need a kind of like data publishing team. And this is really what this slide is about. So publishing data is the government's job, and we accept that as part and parcel of what it is that we now need to do, and that's part and parcel of what people expect of government. We know that we need to do that in open standards so that people can use the data. There is an opportunity for open source, because what we would love to do is use open source tools to allow us to publish that data. And the publishing of data is a kind of greenfield site in terms of prior art and technologies from government's perspective. No one has this infrastructure yet, really, for publishing data on the web. So if we can get the open source toolset right that people can adopt and use, there is a great opportunity for the use of open source in government through this work as well. So we're going to need open source developers alongside the kind of data people, alongside the data mashers. And we're going to really need your help, because there's like Richard and I, and we're really busy. We're working ever so hard, and you're a big number of people. And for this to work, we're going to need to prove the case. And we've got, I think, probably, we've got a few months to surf this wave of real political pressure on departments to publish data. Some skill and expertise, some resource to do it, some great community-led activity, like the stuff that Rufus is going to talk about, that we can link into and work with and support. And if you want to either help us with that, or if you want to build some useful stuff, then please come and talk to us. So, we've not looked at it yet. If you'd like to know, come and talk to us in lunchtime and you can have a look. We're going to bung it somewhere on the web, and you'll be able to download it. We need to figure out, because I'm not too... I don't know. We've not looked at it yet. So, but you have that commitment. We will publish it somewhere. You'll be able to get hold of the raw data. But also, we're looking for people. That's part of the ask. We're looking for people to tell us, how do you want this published? If you just want it somewhere, we can do that. That's not a problem. But also, we're looking for people who will engage and say, actually, I can do something useful with this. But also engage about, you know, I want to do some engineering with this. If I do this with it, I can help make it easier for other people to do useful stuff with this. And that's a conversation we really want to have.
I'd love to make use of your traffic data in my OpenStreetMap-based application, but unfortunately I suspect it's going to have longitudes, which is on the server we're playing, is it not?
Can't claim rights in longs and lats, that's not true.
On the server.
No, they can't, it's not true.
If you trace it off their map, if you trace the stuff off their map, maybe they can claim rights. But they can't claim rights in the long lats themselves, and they've never done that. They haven't, even last year when they were saying that stuff. Don't
microphone
worry,
fits.
It's free. So over to me. Any more questions?
Okay. Have time for one more question?
Yes, go for it.
Which is really about how are you, where is the pressure on, say, local governments or other government departments to actually do what you're doing and assist you? Because Richard said you want other people to help. Well, you're going to have to get other people to employ someone like yourselves to make that happen? And where's the pressure? Where's the target? Where's the black park if it's not done?
Okay, so I think the deal is we've got in the centre a good bit of top-down pressure going on just now. It would be lovely if we had some really effective and more bottom-up pressure. We need to look for some of the kind of early wins, so things that really demonstrate the case, because frankly, it's a wee bit woolly still for people that aren't in this world. It's just a bit woolly in terms of what the benefits are. You publish your data and what do I get? So we need to work at that. And we're working hard at that, and I think the people in this room want to work hard at that too, and we want to help you. So I think it's that kind of like a perfect storm of top down, bottom up, build some compelling examples, and really win the argument.
So is the idea that you're going to be building some sort of centralised infrastructure for this? I can see there's a lot of opportunity for making it easier for your local government.
So that's the point of bootstrapping the whole process, and that is crucially where open source software potentially has a massive role to play here, because if we can commoditize around a bundle of open source tools, both a software stack and methodologies that make it easy and avoid you having to go through procurement, then we can get some acceleration. So the kind of open source bit is a really key ingredient to how we do this at pace and in a distributed way. We're going to have to do some stuff in the center as well, just to kind of get the pace and keep the thing going. But it's going to be that combination. But I think you need to understand that the game plan is to try and do this as business as usual in a distributed way. And for me, that's where open source, I think, can play a really important part.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave the questions for the moment so Rufus can do his presentation. But
there's been lots of time for questions at the end, right? It's, maybe even I can add to the question. Okay, can everyone hear me okay? I'm going to stand up because I prefer that. Okay, so I was my kind of task, I think, with the session, I suppose, to was kind of to kind of critique in a friendly manner what's going on. And so I should start off by saying, first of all, that it is an amazing job that's happening right now. Before I start, I should just say who I am. The Open Knowledge Foundation, we've been found around for 5 years. We're not for profit, and we basically just do a lot of promotion of open data, open content stuff. What does open mean? We build projects, we do stuff from the public domain to government data to geodata to visualization. We do a whole bunch of different stuff. And we're built around kind of working groups, a bit like the W3C, and individual projects. And actually, one of the things that comes up here that I want to emphasize at the beginning is what we mean by open, right? And this is quite important, because often different people mean different things by open, right? Some people mean it's up on a website, my stuff's open. But we want to be really clear here, and this is important when we bug government, by the way, about stuff, that we want freedom to use and reuse data. Okay, I mean, to give an example, 2 years ago, slightly anonymously, I wrote to the Department of Transport for a database they have called MIDAS, which is similar to the kind of database they have there. And it's on a website, and it's you have to have a key to get in. And you write to them, they say, oh yeah, well of course we let anyone have this data, but you've got to agree never to criticize the Department for Transport policies if you use the data. And yeah, we want to know exactly what you're going to do with it in advance. Now, you know, my day job is as an economist at the University of Cambridge. And often when you do research, you don't know when you get data exactly what you're going to do with it in advance. That's the point of getting data and playing around with it. And I think it's probably true for any developer. You don't always know in advance what you're going to do, right? And that's a classic thing, like, you can have it as long as you tell us, as long as you agree to these restrictions. That is bad. And why it's terrible, particularly terrible, is once you start having restrictions like that, they multiply, right? And the thing is here, the vision we have out there in the distance is putting this data together, like huge amounts of data from different places and plugging it together and discovering new stuff that way. Now that's the vision. And when you plug together different data sets with different restrictions, really bad stuff happens. So it's really boring, but it's really important that we be clear what we mean by open, that we have an agreed definition of openness, and that means that stuff, one stuff that's open is compatible with other stuff that's open. Now, we have that in open source, right? There's the open source definition, and it says, and in theory defines what's, you know, compatible stuff. But it's crucial we have that, and it's crucial we push government to release stuff that's compatible. Okay, and so that's my rant at the beginning about defining openness. Now, I want to first of all say how great we've been doing, how great government has been doing, relatively, you might say. I remember the first things we ever did, really, public things we ever did, the Open Knowledge Foundation, was some forums back in 2006 about Parliament data and about geodata. We had the Ordnance Survey there telling us about their pricing structure. I remember, in fact, Steve Coast, I think, did one of his first demos of OpenStreetMap at that event, in which he had covered Regent's Park. We thought, wow, Steve, see you in a couple of decades. How wrong we were. And the other point I was to make is government committed back in 2001, in theory, to marginal cost access. That means basically free on all public sector information except training fund stuff, roughly. So what happened? Right? What happened all this time? So why is it so bloody slow? Okay, well, let's be honest. One answer is, man, I keep cutting in and out of this. Further away, is that better? Can you still hear me at the back? I think it's coming out. I'm probably shouting enough anyway. Like there.
The one thing is to point it at your mouth.
Point at my mouth. I keep moving it around. It's a good tip. Like this way?
Yes.
That's better. Okay, thank you for the tip. So one thing is just to say, this is a good point, right, not just about government, but about all organizations you lobby for data about, right? For example, financial data would be pretty useful, and it's controlled by a few companies, have the big financial data sets, Bloomberg, Knight Ridder, and so on. Now, information is power, right? You start giving out information to the masses, you know, they might misinterpret it, they might investigate you, they might do all this bad stuff, and it's sometimes not even just evil, it's not like MP's expenses, it's also just like they'll misinterpret it, they won't understand, you know, they'll do bad things with it in some way, they'll hurt themselves, you know, the public are like little kids, they need their hand held. And, you know, that's not just bad, right? It is understandable. People do dumb stuff with data. People do misunderstand data a lot. You know, look at a lot of the science that gets reported, I mean, in the news and other things. People don't have good grasp of statistics. But it does seem an odd way to go. And it's also about money, right? It costs money to do some of this stuff. So that's why the lobbying matters. Because a lot of the time MPs think, you know, what matters the most to them? What do they get letters from constituents about? So, okay, the thing is also, and I want to say this to you guys, because I know you're saying we need all this evidence, the benefits are slow. It's like developing electricity or developing roads. You know, you're building really core infrastructure, but it takes time till you find out the cool things to do with that. You know, they almost certainly are there, but it takes time. And it's also the chicken and egg problem you're going on about. You know, without data, you can't build cool apps. Without cool apps, you can't go into your minister and go, hey, wouldn't it be great if we did this? Wouldn't it be great if we had the location of every lavatory in Britain or something, right? You know? You need the cool apps in order to show why that's useful. You need them to be searching for a lavatory somewhere, right? So what should we be doing? You know, what should government be doing? And okay, so one thing is I'm going to reemphasize, I've already sold this all. Let's not go down the one ring to rule them all route. If you like, the freebase route, even, I would call it. Let's name them. Name them and shame them. The small pieces loosely joined. The revolution should be decentralized, and we should have a way the government takes that on. It does not start building all its own infrastructure again, right? So the other thing is, do it fast and do it raw. And this, again, is a general point, not just for government. I remember a few years ago, we had contact with some people at Harvard about a transatlantic slave trade database. This was great, right? They were creating this huge database of actually how many people have been shipped from Africa or wherever to the New World and died, therefore, basically on the trip or whatever. All of this data that allows us to study the oppression that went on. But they were like, oh, yeah, we've got this great data set, but you're going to have to wait 2 years till we've built the web front end. Why? Well, you know, that's our program. We want the shiny front end to be there when we launch. You know, and A, someone else might build the shiny front end. Second, probably other people think of better things to do with your data than you, the many minds principle. And it slows you down. So give us the data raw, give it to us now. Speed, and just do the simple thing. Don't worry about RDF. You know, the data is primary, the interface is secondary. I don't mind in the long run, but it's not that important at the start. So I even have my set of rules, okay? I felt really, I don't know if I should call them rules or suggestions or recommendations or something more polite. So first of all, actually license your stuff openly, and that means put a license and a good license on it, and do a license for data. Just for a message, Creative Commons does not work for data. Note this. Second, data first, interface second. Don't worry about formats. I mean, who here wants to consume RDF? I'd be interested. Okay, three people. I mean, I love RDF. I used to do stuff with RDF, and I still think it's great, but it slows you down a bit. We do it in the long run, of course, but it isn't primary. Reuse existing infrastructure. Use existing storage. Don't build your own. Use existing registries. And this is really important, and this is a subtle point. When you give out stuff for free, you do lose something important. You lose feedback about whether people want the stuff. Like, if I charge you £1,000 or something and no one buys it, I go, okay, this is not worth £1,000 to anyone, right? So I drop my price, you know? And eventually I work out, oh, well, you know, 100 people want it at £100. You learn some information about how valuable it is. It's not just about money. It means there are people who value it at least £100 in some sense. I mean, money is not the thing. But you lose that. So we really got to think about feedback. And by the way, that also means about reward. Someone was asking about this before. How do we reward people who supply the data well? Not just beat them. I think we were saying, like, how do we punish them or give them a black mark? I mean, you know, I would imagine people in local councils are really busy and stressed, and this is not high on their list of, like, publishing the latest statistics for the number of people who, you know, illegally went into the local paddling pool or whatever, right? So you need to think about how do we reward people who do this well, and if you like, punish people who do it badly, but also how do we join together developers and these people? How do we connect them well and create some artificial demand structure, if you like, some way of signaling, this data is useful, we care about it, this isn't, we don't care about it. That is important. So, I don't know, I think this is unfortunately not readable at the back, is my guess. Oh, wow, the power of Firefox, okay. So, this was actually something I scribbled down to Richard 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when I met him, and Berners-Lee had just been announced as the new guy. And I was saying, like, let's take, on the left, we have Office of National Statistics, right, whose data is, in theory, open. Though they put some weird reservations. I don't know if that's changed now, John, but some weird reservations about commercial use that didn't seem compatible with the license they were actually applying. You know. So the big thing is, how do we get the data set out of them? Right? That's the first thing. Then you need to clean it up. And that's that you've got cleaned up data is the black blob at the top. Right? So kind of what I'm trying to say is data.gov.uk's job is to get data out of people. It's to do some basic cleaning. It's to shove it in a store. And it's to register it somewhere. And it's to create its own registry and feedback. Crucially, the feedback. And my point is that most of the stuff on that diagram is outside data.gov.uk. Data.gov.uk is not some new massive silo in which everything will now pour in. It's basically somewhere at the center of this network making things happen around the edges. That's how I see it should be functioning, and it will allow it to go a lot quicker. And I think maybe this ties into what you're saying about the US one. I'm not so sure about the technical, but it's slightly centralized silo mentality. So don't do that. Don't do that. And what I've missed out, so on the other piece of paper I drew on, but which I couldn't take a good photograph of, is developers. Nowhere on that diagram is developers who or users, who are the actual single biggest important people in the system. And the point is that they should be down there in the center, if you like, in the right, doing the feedback. They'll do the translation to RDF. They'll convert XLS spreadsheets to CSV or some other non-proprietary format. Most of this work can be done more efficiently outside of data.gov.uk than inside it. I mean, data.gov.uk should be funding things as well, by the way. I think you need to fund exemplar websites. The if you build it, they will come does not always work. You need to fund some example websites to show how cool stuff is. But developers are going to be central, and they were in my other diagram, but not this one. So, very quickly, I'm going to say, we've been developing. I mean, I know the community as a whole, just to say about the OKF, we've been developing some particular tools. We've this thing called CCAN. You know, we all know of Fresh Meat. We all know of other systems for registering large packages of data or packages of, sorry, software. But what about for data? How can we Debianize? How can we go and build packages that use other packages? How can we one day have a Wikipedia that isn't on one big site,
but which is a huge bunch of decentralized encyclopedias that get compiled together at runtime. That, I think, is the future. We're not going to go on building monoliths. We're going to decentralize knowledge production. And the other thing is we need to store stuff. We need a grid, we need to pay, and one of the things is how do you pay for this stuff? Either you go buy from Amazon or whatever, but one thing we're working on is a grid where people can donate nodes. They can donate nodes to the storage grid. So I think I'm probably out of time, or close to out of time. So I want to say the promised land is nearly here. You know, we've seen it for so long. Now I'm pretty certain we're going to be disappointed by it. I mean, the Jews were, right? They got there and it wasn't as cool as they thought. So the promised land is nearly here. But one thing I think is we should have expectations management. I love that phrase. It's not going to be one, you know, it's not going to be all milk and honey. It's going to take time till we discover a lot of the things we could do. And we've got that is important because we don't want to create disappointment. You know, there are undoubtedly going to be cool apps that get done, right? But it's going to take time to get there. It's going to get time to work out the really good stuff. And there's also a kind of, if you like, a network effect here. You know, when you only have a few data sets, they're not that great. It's when you have a lot of them and you can really pick and choose the ones you want to put together. So I'm just for both for government, but for us, we're going to do amazing stuff, I'm sure. But it may not happen in 6 months. You know, it took a while before the car took off. I mean, maybe it was bad the car took off, but you know what I mean? You know, a lot of time you had to walk around with a guy in front of your car waving a flag. Cars weren't very good. It takes a while before new fundamental infrastructure gets used in the appropriate way. And we should be realistic about that. And it won't be the end of the journey. You know, it's going to be amazing what we're going to see is going to happen. And one thing I would emphasize at the moment that worries me, right, is we talked about open source. Now, this is suddenly a bit of a rant at the end. But if you think at the moment of our data infrastructure and our service infrastructure, we have this whole fight about open source, not everyone, but, you know, to say that certainly open source is a pretty amazing option. And yet, if you think most of the fundamental infrastructures of our current information economy are proprietary, I mean, the single most fundamental one is what? Google. You have to search, find, and locate stuff, and it's entirely proprietary. Most of the systems that we are currently using online are proprietary. It's like we've forgotten all of the lessons that we learned about lock-in and about the cost for technological innovation and so on. You know, and it's really fundamental. We need someone out there building the open search system and really getting it to production ready. Because without that, there'll be all this data, but all of the infrastructure to use it will be owned and controlled. That's not a bad thing. It's great commerce, but we don't want it all to be like that. We don't want it all to be like that. Thank you very much.
I've bought a bundle of business cards that I'll leave on the table.
Start from?
Absolutely great idea. I really, really love it. The one concern I have, and you've probably got one or two other people speaking it on another floor, is the whole privacy issue. In that if you've got enough information, you can then start putting it together to work out things about individuals. How do we reconcile the two stresses?
Should I speak a little bit? Is this still working? Yeah.
I think it's a really great question. So one option, you say, I give out data which has, in theory, no personal information, geodata, which doesn't give your house, doesn't say you identified with your house. So some easy win data, traffic count data, no personal information. On the other stuff, I think it's a really hard thing. We're going to have to face up as a society to a question, which is there are benefits, that it could be very strict privacy, which basically will prevent a lot of data reuse, because you say once you get enough data sets, you can identify often a lot of things. Or we're going to have to bite the bullet and say we're going to try and have some trade-off there, maybe with careful guidelines, but be willing to do it because there are large benefits, be it in biotech, with being able to look at a lot of people's personal data and share it. And I think there's no simple answer. The only simple answer is to start off with the data which has no personal information.
It's an enormous sort of
swathe of stuff where none, where that tension doesn't rise, because there's no way you could recombine it to actually sort of pierce through the privacy barrier. So we should just solve the easy problem now, and in that time, think about how to solve the hard problem.
Gentleman in the middle there.
The Treasury, in a report called the Operational Efficiency Report, has said that they want better, consistent data from government. They want tools to help government manage its own data, and they think it's going to save them £15 billion a year. John and Richard, are you talking to the people at Treasury who are asking for that?
Yeah.
And well, can they fund your efforts out of that £15 billion?
What's your salary?
Spend to save arguments are always really difficult to make for Treasury. Particularly in the current spending climate, but you know, fine.
Gentleman in the glass.
Come back to Ruth's point on the open data definition. It's interesting that you, in your restrictions, didn't say that a non-commercial was an acceptable restriction.
No, non-commercial is unacceptable.
Non-commercial is unacceptable. So
yeah, completely unacceptable.
Right. If you could flesh that out, and also be interested in John's reaction to that as well. If we're allowed to be in the same school of thought, but if we're asking government civil servants to spend money putting data into a format that can be reused, we're demonstrating the value of that reuse. Their instinct is then to say, I should get some of that value back.
Sure, sure.
How do you respond or deal with that argument? It underpins the whole open survey philosophy, I guess.
Okay, well, there's two. Okay, can everyone hear me at the back? Yes. Good. So there's two things. One is, why is non-commercial such a problem, right? It's particularly a problem in data. It's always a problem. But I talked about reuse, right? Now, what happens if you want to combine something with a non-commercial restriction with something else which had a pure share-alike license? Disaster, right? You cannot put anything, for example, onto Wikipedia that's non-commercial because it's incompatible with buy share-alike. So fundamentally, once you start having these restrictions, the only restrictions that are basically cross-compatible are share-alike, which, if you like, then is this black hole because everything becomes share-alike. But it's compatible. Or attribution. Those are basically the only things you can have. And it's why other restrictions, you know, I had someone who wanted to give us data on corporate, linguistic corporate, yeah, like big data sets of linguistic corporate. But I don't know, apparently it's used a lot in the military. I didn't know this, but he was like, I don't want military use of this. You know, okay, well, I don't want the Americans to use it, I don't want the Iranians to use it. You know, there's all of these kind of restrictions people start wanting to have. And well, guess what happens? Once you have five of those, that's it. None of your data is compatible, you know, because you can't join the ones, you don't want the Americans with the ones which they share alike, but you're not allowed to share it with the Iranians, yeah? So that's why non-commercial is a disaster. And so that's the answer to government as well, which is, yeah, you do need to, you know, you obviously are going to spend money to save money of some kind, but if you will kill, first of all, commercial use has to happen here. You know, it's got to come from the business, a lot of the interest and demand for this. I mean, it's also going to come from other people, that's crucial. And if you want reuse from business, you can't use non-commercial, and it's incompatible with all the other stuff.
Is Creative Commons compatible, useful for data if it's not non-commercial? As you said before,
No, Creative Commons does not work for data.
Other
than CC0. Because the rights in data are different from the rights in content. Right? That's the simple, so like, there's a database directed here in the EU, which is specifically for database rights. And so they don't speak to any of those rights, and so they're not licensed by the license. It's like CC, to take a trivial point, CC doesn't license your trademarks. You know, if you have a bunch of trademarks and you license stuff, you're not licensing your trademarks. You're only licensing the rights we're talking about. So it's not appropriate for data, unfortunately. So we have a license, by the way. I should say very clearly, the Open Knowledge Foundation have drafted two licenses for data. The public domain definition of license and the open database license, which has just been launched last week, and which is a share-alike license for data.
Could you just explain why commercial works better than Creative Commons open?
Why non-commercial doesn't work well, or why allowing commercial use works better. So let me be clear. I'm advocating open stuff, and non-commercial is bad because it restricts reuse. Because let's say I license myself under non-commercial, and you have a share-alike license like Wikipedia. They don't go together. Because one says you're not allowed to use it commercially, and the other says you are, and you're not allowed to change the license terms. Yeah? And that then can be banned, they don't work. And I'm then also saying that Creative Commons licenses do not work for data. So the ICP drafted are very similar to CC licenses in what they say, what they mean in terms of your rights. They say you can share alike with attribution or it's public domain, but they're appropriate for data. I think, yeah.
Okay, so the really compelling examples in terms of stuff that we find works well for us when we're pitching, and Richard can also probably speak to this, are things that speak to how we make public services work better. So things that help people get better public service outcomes in health or education or, you know, stuff in their community, stuff in their lives. And when you get that connection to we can make public services better, and one of the things that we can do is we can make public services better simply by making available information about those services, where they are, what people think about them, how they are inspected, and so on and so on. That argument is one that has real traction, and it works with, you know, most of the big departments that are there worrying about critical public services. So if you have that in mind, that's one of the most helpful uses. The other thing, in terms of the commercial, non-commercial point, which the government does understand, at least from a kind of macroeconomic perspective, commercial reuse is vital. The whole agenda is about encouraging, a really important part of the whole agenda is encouraging commercial exploitation of public sector information, because government actually has a really great business model. It's called taxation. You know, if our economy does well, government does well, and then public services do well. And but even there, it's very, very difficult. We had officials coming across from France to talk to us in OPSI last week, and from the economics ministry, and they're asking quite probing questions about, okay, so you're doing all of this work around starting to make more and more data available. How much economic benefit do you think you're going to get? Well, we've got some ideas. We've done, I mean, Rufus has done some work, but it's very, very hard to be able to actually pinpoint some of those things in terms of how big the economic benefit really is. But we're very clear that we must allow commercial reuse, and that commercial exploitation of public sector information is one of the big drivers, and that, if you like, the information industry, in terms of pushing government to do more of this, is a very helpful dynamic.
The example I use in almost every presentation I give to policy colleagues is a site called Schools Map, which does really simple data matching. It puts every school in the country on a Google map, sortable by Ofsted score. The interesting thing is that I show that to policy colleagues and I ask them how much they think it would cost both to build that. And they always come up with a six-figure sum. They're staggered that all that they actually needed was for us to put the information out there, and somebody could just throw that up in their spare time. You know, that is something that addresses one of the core fundamental problems in public service. Of, you know, how do we empower people to choose their schools? How do we make people's lives better around education? And it solves it in a really easy way. And that's the thing that really makes people sit up and go, wow, there's something in this. So examples like that, or examples that just make people's lives better. You know, it doesn't always have to be a big, hard public service. Just like the examples of cycling, you know, we as a government, we think cycling is good. It makes people healthy. It gets people out in the fresh air. We think people should cycle. There are some great things going on around sort of route choice in cycling, where government could just open up the data a little bit more, and it would help encourage them. But that's, you know, we have government departments there, and that speaks to the policy audience. They want to make people's lives better. They just don't always understand how these tools can help do that.
Okay, we're going to have to call an end to the questions there because it's lunchtime, but before we do, can we just thank our speakers once again?